JM in the AM, Tuesday morning broadcast. I thank you for joining us. It's a 9 days format Tuesday. My name is Nachum Siegel, 1 week away from Tisha B'Av. And we are here each morning with very interesting programming. Rabbi Beryl Wine's incredible lectures on history, and we're really concentrating on the historical lectures this week. They're a big hit, and his the information, the way for you to be in touch with his office to be a subscriber to his lectures and his incredible series on Jewish history, 1-800-499-WEIN, 1-800-499-WEIN, or rabbiwein.com, rabbiwein.com. This morning we're going to start with part three of the series on Europe and the Jews. These lectures were given just recently, just anywhere from 12 to 20 months, within the last 12 to 20 months, in Jerusalem. These have never been heard before by this audience. And today we explore the topic of the Eastern Orthodox Church. Rabbi Beryl Wine, in our 9 days format on a Tuesday morning, you are listening to JM in the AM.
All religions suffer from fracturing, from the fact that there is no monolithic religion. Within the religion itself, amongst its believers, there are different opinions and different groupings, and oftentimes the bitterness between the different groupings of the same religion is far greater than the bitterness that exists between different religions. And in the history of Christianity, and tonight we're discussing the Eastern Orthodox Church, Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox, these differences have cost tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of lives over the centuries. And the Jewish people, the Jewish religion, we have also differences between us, very severe differences, but that has never led to this type of killing and massacres for various reasons. It's not that the Jews are not capable of that, because true believers can do anything, as we are witness. If you're a true believer, then God is on your side, so then you can do whatever you want to do, because you're doing God's work. But it has never developed that way within us, but in the outside world, it is quite common. Now, early Christianity split into two almost immediately because of the split in the Roman Empire. And that was an Eastern Empire centered in Byzantium, which later became Constantinople, which today is Istanbul, and the Western Empire, which was centered in Rome. And the church, when it successfully converted most of the Roman Empire to Christianity, it did so in two different centers. One was the Latin center of Rome, where Latin was the language, and the other was the Greek center, which was in Constantinople, where Greek was, so to speak, the universal language of that area, the language of the intellect. And therefore, there arose two separate churches, with differing beliefs and differing customs, and they were very inimical one to the other. They didn't like each other. Now, we are talking also about a struggle about territory, about wealth, about turf, about all of the good things that go together with all religions, right? And the Eastern, what they call themselves, the Eastern Orthodox, which is a Greek word, they claimed to be the real Christians, and they looked at the Western Church as being apostates. and the Western Church responded in kind. They looked at the Eastern Church as being apostates. On top of that, and to further complicate the matter, each of the differing groups faced heresies within their population. Heresy in our time is basically a difference of opinion regarding fundamental beliefs. But again, in the history of the early church, heresy was a capital crime. If someone was convicted of being a heretic, they burned them at the stake. And heresy has no cure, because there always will be heretics. There always will be different opinions. There will always be people that deny the ultimate truth of X, Y, or Z. Now, the Eastern Church had a heresy called Manichaean. The Manichaean heresy was the Eastern Church operated in the Middle East and in Iran, in Persia, Iraq, and its major enemy was the Parthian Empire, which was a Persian empire that still was pagan. And the Eastern Church attempted to convert the Parthians to Christianity, and if they didn't convert them, to kill them. Now, Jews lived in this area, substantial Jewish population. Most of the Jews did not live in Europe in the 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th centuries. Most of the Jews lived in the Mediterranean area, and therefore most of the Jews were subject to the Eastern Orthodox Church more than the Roman Catholic Church. Now, the Manichaean, that was a combination of paganism, the ancient Persian belief, the Zoroastrians, which the Talmud describes for us. They believe in gods of light and of darkness. And so, for instance, we have it in Bamei Madlikim, that in that Mishnah that we recite. So we say that the person that blows out the candles Friday night because he's afraid of the non-Jews. What is he afraid of, the non-Jews? Because sometimes Friday night was the night of the god of darkness. And according to the Zoroastrians, if it was the night of the god of darkness, you weren't allowed to have light. And the Jewish woman that lit her candles, if they saw light in the house, so then the Jew was subject to literally to be killed. And therefore, the opinion in the Mishnah is that one does not, so to speak, violate the Sabbath, you know, because it's a life-threatening situation to have lights on in the house, to have candles burning. And throughout the Talmud, if we look carefully, we see many references to the Parthians, to this type of paganism, and to the difficulties that existed because of it. Now, along came Christianity, dominated from Constantinople, and they conduct a war against the Parthians. The war, it's not over in 5 minutes, as we would like wars to be over. It took like 110, 112 years. History is a long-running thing. We are not, but history is. And eventually, the church prevails, and the Parthian emperor and empire expire. And now Eastern Orthodox Christianity is dominant in the entire area from almost India on the east to the Balkans on the west, and from Turkey and Greece in the north to the Mediterranean coast of Egypt, etc., to the south. Enormous swath of land. Now, there's a religion that grows up called Manichaean. Now, the Manichaean heresy is that they combine the Zoroastrian ideas with Christianity. And therefore, they have a hybrid form of paganism. The Christianity rejects that, rejects it very strongly. And the Manichaean religion did not believe in the divinity of the Christian Savior. It did not believe that God came down to earth in the form of a human being. It had many heresies involved with it. And therefore, the Eastern Orthodox Church promotes a war, literally a war against the Manichaean heresy, a war which lasts 2, 3, 4 centuries, and eventually destroys all the Manichaeans. In this war, there is an element that affects the Jewish people. Why? Because the Eastern Orthodox Christians said, in effect, well, the reason the Manichaeans can believe that is because the Jews put them up to it. The Jews are the ones that don't believe in the divinity of Jesus. The Jews are the ones that, they're the troublemakers. Now, in the Talmud, for instance, all references to Christianity are references to Eastern Orthodox Christianity. They are not references to Roman Catholicism, because they were not familiar with Roman Catholicism. They dealt only with the Eastern Orthodox. Now, the Eastern Orthodox were different in many respects. They did not have a Latin Bible. They had the Greek Bible, and in fact, they probably had the Septuagint, the Targum HaShivim, which was translated into Greek. The Torah was translated into Greek centuries earlier. The New Testament was in Greek, originally either in Hebrew or Greek, but it certainly was not in Latin. The Latin translation came later, the Douay Bible. Because of that, you have different, you make a translation of a translation of a translation, you're not going to get the exact nuance correct. For instance, the concept of the virgin birth, which came late into Western Christianity, was based on the mistranslation of the Hebrew word Alma, which appears in the prophet Yeshayahu. Alma means in Hebrew a young woman, like Elem means a young man. In Greek, Alma, a young woman, became also a synonym for a virgin. And in the Latin, it became only a virgin. And therefore, you have this whole cult of the virgin birth, which is predated Christianity. And the Roman emperors also said that somehow they were born of virgins. It was like a sign of being supernatural. But in Christianity, it came into being because of these types of mistranslations. Now, the Greek version was closer to the Hebrew version. And therefore, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, many of these beliefs did not exist. But the Eastern Orthodox Church was far more primitive than the Roman Catholic Church. It did not have philosophic underpinnings as the Roman Catholic Church had, and it also incorporated icons and statues and all sorts of holy places that were revered, and therefore it was much closer to paganism in the eyes of the Jews than was the Roman Catholic Church. Now, we have the famous discussion in Tosfos, in the 11th century, 12th century in France. The French rabbis discussed How can they do business with the non-Jews, with the Catholic population? For instance, in the season of the year when the Catholic holidays, Christian holidays occur, in the Mishnah it says it's forbidden, 3 days before, 3 days afterward, you're not allowed to do it. And then there was a question of wine, dealing with non-Jewish wine, or selling wine to non-Jews. Rashi's main customers were not Jews. And so therefore, Tosfos came to the conclusion, which was adopted by European Jewry, that Christianity is not paganism. And therefore, the laws of Avodah Zorah, the laws regarding paganism, do not apply to Christianity, to Roman Catholicism, because of the fact that they are technically monotheists, even though there's a Trinity, etc. That is discussed, that matter was discussed thoroughly by the great scholars of the medieval time, and it facilitated Jewish life in Europe. However, the Jews who lived in the Middle East, and there was a large Jewish community here in the land of Israel, still in the 4th and 5th centuries, it's only then that the Jewish community would begin to evaporate and move to Babylonia. But there was a large Jewish community in the land of Israel and an even larger Jewish community in Iraq and Babylonia. And they were under the rule of the Eastern Orthodox Church. It was much harder to deal with the Eastern Orthodox Church as being monotheistic than it was to deal with Roman Catholicism. And therefore, we find that the Jews had a very difficult life under the Eastern Orthodox Church when it dominated those countries. And the Jews naturally refused a mass conversion. And the Eastern Orthodox did to the Jews what they did to the Manchians. They persecuted them, they executed them. Eventually, they drove them out of the land of Israel. From about the 5th century till the 15th century, for almost 1,000 years, there's no major Jewish population in the land of Israel. There still were Jews here, but we're talking about a few hundred people. We're not talking about any major Jewish population. In the 15th and 16th centuries, there came a larger Jewish population because of the expulsion from Spain. And then in the 19th century, the beginning of Jewish settlement here, that has resulted in 6.5 million Jews being here now. But the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Byzantine Church, was determined to eradicate the Jewish presence in the Middle East. And it would have succeeded, except the Lord gave them a gift called Islam. And just at the point, at the tipping point, so to speak, when the Eastern Orthodox Church was on the verge not only of driving the Jews out of the land of Israel, but of eliminating the Jewish, the ancient, powerful, numerous Jewish community that existed in Babylonia, Muhammad came along, the sword of Islam, and within a few decades, the Eastern Orthodox Church was driven back to Constantinople. And the Middle East became Muslim. Now, the Muslims also converted by the sword, but the Jews somehow came to an accommodation with the Muslims that they could not come to with the Eastern Orthodox Church. Now, the Roman Catholic Church also had a heresy, which they also blamed on the Jews. So there's a history here. I mean, that's the reason Hitler was able to blame communism on the Jews. And the people believed it. Because any time there is a heresy, and communism is a heresy, there's an ancient understanding in the non-Jewish world in Europe is that the Jews are responsible. We are the creators of all heresies. And therefore, the foreign minister of Sweden can say that we created ISIS. And to us, as ridiculous as it sounds, if you look at it again in the backdrop of history, in the backdrop of the type of accusations made against the Jewish people over the millennia in Europe, it resonates. It has legs, so to speak. It can be. So the Roman Catholics had a heresy called the Gnostics, G-N-O. The Gnostics. Now the Gnostics were a group of people who also denied the divinity of the Christian Savior. Gnosticism was based on the Greek word which meant knowledge, and they created a, so to speak, a knowledge rationalist basis for faith, accepting many doctrines of Christianity, but denying many others. The church, just as the Eastern Church persecuted the Manichaeans, the Western Church persecuted the Gnostics, and long-running 150-year war, and eventually destroyed them. But again, the Jews were held to be responsible for these problems. Now, the Eastern Church, for instance, was very big on monasteries. They are on that even till today. You want to see an Eastern Orthodox monastery on the road to the Dead Sea, there's a place called Marsaba, which is built into the cliff, into the mountain. I think there's today a few monks still there. But monasteries was very big. It afforded a separation from practical life, but it created a sect of holy people. And Eastern Orthodoxy exists on the basis of holy people. Now, all of this, there are a lot of things that are in the, I don't know how to put this, that I don't get excommunicated, but there are a lot of things that have drifted into our world that are not necessarily part of us. You know, we have a lot of baggage. You don't stay 2,000 years in exile, 2,000 years being a distinct minority without acquiring some baggage that's not yours. And the Eastern Orthodox world was based upon that there were special people, holy people, who didn't have to behave as a holy person, but they had special powers. I mean, the most telling example for our time is that of Rasputin, the monk that advised the Tsar and the Tsarina in the First World War, in the period before and the period during the war, and who finally was killed by other members of the Russian aristocracy because he was leading Russia. They felt into a great disaster, which he was, and the disaster happened anyway. But he was a monk, but he was a womanizer, he was a thief, he was a you name it, he was it, but he was holy. So the creation of holy people who don't have to behave holy was a very strong influence, and it creates all sorts of difficulties. Now, the Greek Orthodox Church was not centralized the way the Roman Catholic Church was. The Roman Catholic Church had a pope who was the supreme pontiff. It had the College of Cardinals, it had a hierarchy, archbishops, bishops, priests, etc. It was very well organized. The Eastern Orthodox Church was more chaotic. It did not have a pope. It does not have so one today. It has patriarchs, but there's a patriarch in Greece, and there's a patriarch in Jerusalem, and there's a patriarch in Serbia. It is much more diffuse, and therefore it is much more nationalistic, depending on the country that it is in. And then, for instance, the Roman Catholicism, which is supposed to be supranational, has nothing to do with the country that it's in. Everybody is supposed to obey what Rome says. Because of that, therefore, Jews found it easier to deal with the Eastern Orthodox churches after a while, because they were, it was all local, right? What did Tip O'Neill said? All politics are local. In local, you can come out with something. You're not arguing theology. You're not arguing politics. You're not arguing, you know, you want to get your street fixed, or you want to, you know, let us alone. And therefore, in these areas, it was more manageable. But as I mentioned, since the Middle East became Muslim, the Eastern Orthodox Church had very little effect now on the Jews, and won't have much effect for almost 1,000 years until the Jews come to Russia. Russia is Eastern Orthodox. The religion in Russia was Eastern Orthodox. And for instance, during the Crusades, during the First Crusade, when the Crusaders came to Constantinople, they burned the city down. They destroyed, even though it was all Christian, because to them, the infidel was anybody who was not exactly like them. And since the Eastern Orthodox were not like them, they killed them all. And the rupture between the Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic Church has lasted till our time. Pope John Paul attempted to make a reconciliation, met with the patriarch in the Greek Orthodox patriarch in Istanbul, etc. But there is great tension, and there's great tension here in Jerusalem between the different ones. The example is there's a site here in Jerusalem that's called the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which according to Christian belief is the burial place of Jesus. Well, who has the right to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre? So every year there are fist fights. The Israeli police have to come in and separate the warring priests as to who has the right to hold the service, when should be held, etc., etc. Because until this day, the enmity between them is not abated. There's also a difference in the calendar. In the 1500s, it became apparent that the calendar was out of whack. Now, the reason for it is that the day of the sun, the year of the sun, is 365 and a quarter, approximately a quarter days. If you have a year that's 365 days, the quarters start adding up. And over the centuries, it became obvious that there were all sorts of problems, because then it would start moving around the year, the holidays, etc. So Pope Gregory, they called an 11-day recess. For 11 days, the date remained the same. And then they started again, so that caught everybody up. And he had the system that we have today of leap years. Sometimes February is 28, sometimes it's 29, all of which is to adjust this. Now, this calendar is also off a little, but nobody seems to care that much about it. Though every year there is a resolution in the United Nations to perfect the calendar. And the way to do it is to skip a day. If you skip a day, we're going to have a problem because Shabbos will be Friday. So until now, that resolution has never gained traction simply because of the fact that the Catholic countries won't let it. But if it ever does pass, we will have another difficult situation to face. In any event, so the Roman Catholic Church adopted the Gregorian calendar. The Eastern Orthodox Church kept the old calendar, which they keep until today. So for them, the Christian holidays are 11 or 12 days later. It's never December 25th. It's January something or other. And creates its problems. So let's look at the Jews now. The Jews come to Europe. They're under the Western Church. They move east. They have to move east. Eventually, they end up in Poland, in the Baltic states, in Belarus, in Ukraine, in Russia. Now, these countries never liked each other. They are of different religions. Poland is staunchly Roman Catholic. The Ukraine has its own brand of Catholicism. Russia is, and like most of the Slavic countries, Eastern Orthodox. And whether the world wants to admit it or not, because it's not politically correct, most of our problems are problems of religion. What goes on now in the world is certainly a problem of religion, even though no one will call it that. It's a conflict of religion, of faith. There is no fight like a religious fight. Because, as I mentioned before, everything is permissible under such circumstances. And the Jews are caught in the middle. The Jews are caught in the middle between the Western Church and the Eastern Church. Now, until Peter the Great, in the late 17th century, there were practically no Jews who lived in Russia proper. The Jews lived in Poland, the Jews lived in Lithuania, Jews lived in the Ukraine, but they did not live in Russia. Russia then was like Muscovy. It was the heartland of Russia. Peter the Great, you always have to be wary of people who call themselves the Great, but Peter the Great expanded Russia. And he wanted to westernize Russia. He wanted to push Russia to the west. He built the great city of St. Petersburg, which he called a window to the west. But he defeated the Swedish king, Gustavus Adolphus, and he took away vast swatches of Poland, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and incorporated them into Russia. And now, when the Jews, for the first time in Eastern Europe, had to deal with Eastern Orthodox religion. The Russian Church, till today, has a concept called Holy Mother Russia, meaning that to them, Russia is holy land. To them, the land of Israel is not holy land. Holy Land is Russia, Holy Mother Russia. And they always influence the czars that in Holy Mother Russia, no infidels should live, because that's a defilement of Holy Mother Russia. It's a contradiction to this concept. And therefore, that is why the Russian czars had a problem for 200, 250 years until the time of the revolution. They had a problem that they called the Jewish problem. The Jewish problem is, how do you get rid of the Jews from Russia? They don't belong there. Now, the reason that they were there is because Russia expanded. Had Russia remained in its original pre-Peter the Great boundaries, they wouldn't have had the problem, because there wouldn't have been Jews living there. But now the Jews were there, and the church constantly stirred it up. And since the Russian Tsar was also the titular head of the Russian church, so he therefore had the responsibility to somehow solve the Jewish problem. And they never came to a satisfactory solution, but they created a terrible time for the Jews. Terrible time. Simply because of this religious belief. Now, throughout Russia, you know, even if today, you'll go along the road, there will be statues, icons, holy places, places to worship, etc. All symbol of the Eastern Orthodox Church. And in Halacha, there were all sorts of discussions, where to pray, where a Jew could pray, if a Jew was on the road, how far he had to be, etc. Things which to us, we are not aware of, and we really don't know what they're talking about. But there it was in everyday life. It was part of the structure of the community, all of these holy places which existed. And it had a... an effect on Jewish life. We don't live in such an atmosphere, and even what we did in the United States, we don't live in such an atmosphere. So it's hard for us to realize how oppressive the atmosphere of enforced Christianity can be, and how it affects a society, and how difficult Jewish life was. And because of that, therefore, many things occurred in Jewish life that simply were a reaction to this type of situation. Now, in the Balkans, the Jews came to the Balkans as well. There was a large Jewish population in Serbia and what was then Yugoslavia later. There also, you had the Orthodox and Roman Catholic Church bump into each other. Croatia, for instance, is Roman Catholic. Serbia is Eastern Orthodox. Austria, the Austrian Empire, Austrian-Hungarian Empire, the Habsburg Empire, was Roman Catholic. It controlled the Balkans. But the Balkans were a polyglot group of people, and they were, many of them were Eastern Orthodox, as Serbia was. And in fact, we could say that much of the First World War, the beginning of the First World War, which begins with Austria and Serbia, you know, we just had an incident that Turkey shot down a Russian plane. So far, just the two egomaniacs are hollering at each other. But no one expects, but a century ago, this would have been war. Because what happened was that the Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated by a Serbian. He was the Archduke of Austria. He was assassinated. It wasn't a Serbian, it was a Bosnian that assassinated him. But it was under the... Austria blamed Serbia. Serbia said, it's not our fault. And ended up that 20 million people got killed. And you had a war of 4.5 years that changed all of Europe till today. But the war was also a religious war, because Austria was Catholic and Serbia was Eastern Orthodox. And that plays a role in all of this. It's interesting to note that for some reason in the Second World War, the Jews in Serbia were able to survive much better than the Croats, for instance, destroyed the Jewish community. The Slovenes, they destroyed the Jews in the Holocaust. The Serbia did not. And therefore, in the Balkans War, which took place in the 1990s, Israel was not quick to condemn Serbia when the rest of the Western world did so. So there are, it's so complicated. It is so beyond the ability to somehow piece it together. But the Jews were caught. So now Israel is caught in the middle, right? How can you not be against Serbia? Look what they did, right? Look what they did to the Muslims. Look at the atrocities they committed. On the other hand, how can you be against Serbia when thousands of Jews were saved because of Serbia? So there never are any easy answers to all of this. And this religious conflict always caught the Jews in the middle. Now, Byzantine Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, had a great influence on art and architecture in the Jewish world. You find today many artifacts and mosaic floors, etc., from the Byzantine period of synagogues that were built exactly the way the Byzantine churches were built. Same type of form, same type of artistry, the same type of coloring, etc., because we always adopt the prevalent culture. So in the Middle Ages, for instance, the question arose whether or not synagogues could have stained glass, because the non-Jewish houses of worship all had stained glass. Now, they had magnificent stained glass. And there's a whole discussion at halacha whether you're allowed to have stained glass. But the rabbis were forced to allow it because the people wanted it. The people wanted, you know, if the church has stained glass, then why shouldn't the synagogue have stained glass? And the same thing was with the Eastern Orthodox architecture, artistry, mosaics, everything until statues. Statues naturally were never allowed, and no iconic forms were allowed. But generally speaking, the Byzantine Church had a great deal of influence on how synagogues looked and how Jews dressed and how Jews viewed the arts generally. The cockpit of the problems between the Eastern Orthodox and the Jews was always in Turkey, because that was Constantinople. Now, Turkey turned Muslim, but they never eliminated the Eastern Orthodox Church from Turkey. And therefore, the Jews sought to exploit the division between the Muslims and the Eastern Orthodox Christians to their advantage, to allow them somehow to exist, to do commerce, etc., etc. The problem with that was that if anything went wrong, the Jews were blamed. And that became a very, very difficult situation many times. But most of the time, the Jews in Turkey were able to be under the radar, simply because of the conflict between the Christians and the Muslims. So to speak, they didn't have time for the Jews. It's only when the Jews came up and made demands, or for instance, Shabtai Tzvi, when he claimed to be the Messiah, then trouble occurred. But otherwise, they were able to escape it. But they were never able to escape it in Russia. Never. Now, here in Jerusalem today, you have a very strong Eastern Orthodox Church. It's not numerous, but it owns a lot of property, and it is supported by Russia. It was supported by Russia even when Russia was communist, because it's the foothold here in Jerusalem. And therefore, for instance, the Russian compound, Russia wants it back. They say they own it. And Israel is in serious negotiations regarding it, because who wants to start up with Russia? And that was based on Russian Orthodoxy. And the same thing is true of many, many other places in the country. There are very strong presence here. Now, there are breakoffs from the Russian Orthodoxy. There's, for instance, the Armenian Church. So we all know there's an Armenian quarter in the old city. Now, the Armenian Church, they are Eastern Orthodox, but they are not the Eastern Orthodox. They're Armenian. In the First World War, the Turks massacred 1.5 million Armenians, a factor that the world has ignored until now. Turkey denies it until today, even though there's incontrovertible proof of it. So there's the Armenian Church. Head of the Coptic Church in Egypt is now visiting Jerusalem, which is a major thing because no official Egyptian has ever come to Israel since 79, even though we have this peace treaty, etc. But he came because it's the funeral of the Coptic Patriarch of Jerusalem. He came to the funeral. So that also is a Christian church in the middle of a Muslim country, very badly persecuted, protected only by the fact that the military rule Egypt. If the Muslim Brotherhood would rule it again, God forbid, so then they would be destroyed. So you have all, the Eastern Orthodox Church is fragmented. It's little pieces. But in the little pieces, almost all of them somehow influence and have a connection to Jews, because Jews live in those countries. And here in Israel especially, because all of them own property here. In fact, the Knesset building is on land that is owned by the Greek Orthodox Church. The Knesset has a lease, I think a 99-year lease. What will happen when the lease expires? So I guess the Knesset will figure it out themselves what to do. They will have to. But we don't realize how much property here in the land of Israel is owned by the Eastern Orthodox Church. And if you own property, you have influence. And if you have influence, then it works many ways. Now, in the Israeli-Palestinian struggle, the Eastern Orthodox Church has uniformly been on the side of the Palestinians from day one, even though their presence there is minimal. Most of the Christian Arabs in the Palestinian authorities have left. The Palestinian Christian Arabs have declined by 70% in numbers. You can find them all over the United States and Chile and Argentina, but they're not here anymore. Nevertheless, the Greek Orthodox Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, was very pro-Palestinian, much more than the Roman Catholic Church. But again, it depends, because sometimes, locally, they're the best friends that you have. And they help. It's a doctrinal thing. It's a question of coming, the whole problem of the State of Israel to Christianity generally is a doctrinal thing that has not yet been solved. How to deal with it. Because it was something that was not supposed to happen. And if you posit that things are not supposed to happen, and they happen, then you have difficulties. You have great difficulties. And Christianity generally in Europe now is on the decline. Communism eliminated much of the power of the Russian Orthodox Church in Russia, though it is not dead in Russia at all. But it's not what it once was. After 75 years of communism, of atheism, it was weakened considerably. And generally, the climate in the Western world today is anti-religious, anti-Christian. Roman Catholicism suffered greatly in Europe. Its strength today is mainly in the South America, Asia, and what was called the underdeveloped countries. That's where its growth is. But in the heartland of Europe, it is not on the upgrade. Let's put it that way. It doesn't really have the clout that it once had, and therefore you have a more universal and less doctrinal church because of the fact that it has to deal with those things. The same thing is true of the Eastern Orthodox Church in Greece, for instance. It's estimated that most of the population doesn't believe in anything, which and church attendance is down. It's a difficult time for both the Roman Catholic and the Eastern Orthodox, and as we'll discuss, also for the Protestant churches. It's going both ways at the same time. There are those that are stronger, but most of them are weaker. Most of them have very little growth and very little, their influence has been diminished and diminished and diminished. So we'll see what happens. Now, in the Holocaust, the complaints against the Eastern Orthodox Church by the Jews certainly are less than they were against the Roman Catholic Church, because they felt that the Pope could have done something. No one really, and don't forget that Greece, so to speak, was part of the good guys, right? They were really the allies, etc. And because of that, therefore, the resentment wasn't there as it is against the Roman Catholic Church for its participation or encouragement even in what happened. So the Jews in Europe found themselves in a very bad situation, not of their own causing, but simply because of the ruptures that existed in Christianity and the continual wars and the continual competition and continual heresies. There will be many more heresies, and many more people will be killed because of the heresies. But eventually, at the end of the day, there were people that believed that all the heresies were initiated or somehow supported by Jews, and therefore it became a Jewish problem and not just a Christian problem as well.
This concludes this lecture by Rabbi Beryl Wine.
JM in the AM. Rabbi Wine on the topic of the Eastern Orthodox Church as we explore Europe and the Jews, a great brand new history series that we are presenting here at JM and the AM in our 9 days spoken word format.